Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, as always. Today, we'll have another survivor of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla attack, our dear friend and the friend of peace and justice, Anne Wright. Anne, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
It's a pleasure to be with you again, Cindy.
It's so nice to talk to you. You were on the Freedom Flotilla, and it was, I believe it was on Casey's birthday, the day that we celebrated it with my kids, on May 30th, when we heard that the flotilla was under attack. And I just want to tell you that we were all super concerned because we knew you were on it, and we were very relieved to find out that you were okay.
Well, thank you very much. And it was a very tragic situation that occurred where the Israeli military decided that it had to use force against six civilian, unarmed humanitarian ships that were merely trying to bring reconstruction materials to the people of Gaza and as citizens of the world to say, we the citizens demand that our governments stop participating in this illegal, immoral siege on the 1.5 million people that live in Gaza.
And I had Ambassador Edward Peck on last week, and he was also on the flotilla. I understand you all weren't on the same boat, but he, first of all, tell us the experience that you had on the boat that you were on.
Well, I was on the Challenger 1, which was a small boat that had about 17 passengers on it. I had earlier been on the large boat, the Marvi Marmara, the one that actually was really badly attacked by the Israelis in terms of using lethal force, with 9 people dying by Israeli bullets and over 50 other people being wounded by the gunfire that the Israelis wreaked upon the 600 passengers that were on the ship. I had come off of that ship about 48 hours earlier. I'd been on the ship for 48 hours and then was asked to come off of it about 12 hours before the attack started. And virtually at the moment that our ships were going to turn and head from our meeting place to go to Gaza, I relinquished my space on the big ship to 3 German parliamentarians who had just arrived on the Challenger 1 from Cyprus. And they wanted to be on the larger ship because there were more parliamentarians from countries all around the world that were on the ship. So I observed the attack of the Marvi Marmara from the Challenger 1, which was about 150 yards off the stern of the ship. We saw the Zodiac boats of the Israeli naval forces approaching the stern of the ship, and we saw percussion grenades being shot up into all the levels of the 6 decks of that very, very large ship. You know, it was a ferry boat, a day ferry boat that usually sailed between the islands of Turkey, but it had been hired to take this large group of international activists, primarily Arab and Muslim, but also from European countries, 600 people. The percussion grenades did what they were supposed to do. I mean, they are very disorienting. They have huge bangs that just disorient you. Smoke that filled the area of the back decks of the Marmara. The Israeli military was also firing paintballs up at people. At some point, they started using lethal fire, and that was probably, in my estimation, but this is why an independent investigation needs to take place. As the 3 helicopters were coming across the top of the Marvi Marmara and starting to have commandos repel down from the helicopters, an Al Jazeera reporter says that a passenger that was standing next to him on the top deck all of a sudden just fell in a pool of blood. And if that is true, then one could say, well, the other passengers that were on the top deck, when they saw those commandos coming down and not knowing what they were going to do, whether they were going to shoot and kill other passengers, then they took up sticks and rails and started beating them. We didn't see from the video that the Israeli military provided to the rest of the world. You know, that video that showed lots of people on the top deck beating at least three commandos. We didn't see the end of it. The Israeli military didn't let us see the fact that the captain of the Mavi Marmara came outside the wheelhouse with a bullhorn, yelling at everyone, stop, 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 hitting the commandos, take the commandos down to the first station, get them treated, and return them to the Israeli military so that you couldn't be accused of holding or capturing the Israelis. And then shortly, the captain was on the radio with the Israelis saying, you all are shooting people there. We have wounded people. We have dead people. We have no way to take care of them. You have to send medical help.
Well, when this started occurring, was your boat already boarded?
Well, it was not boarded at that point. We were about 150 yards off the port stern, and as the attack started on the Marmara, the captain of that ship radioed the captain of our ship and said, why don't you all go on ahead, try to see if you can outrun some of these commando ships, and maybe some of them that are at the Marmara will follow you all. So we had the smallest and the speediest of the little ships, and so off we went. And about 15 minutes, we were going at top speed, which was about 20 knots. The flotilla had been going at a very slow speed, 8 knots, because it was going at the speed of the slower ship, which was a Greek cargo ship. But we sped ahead and then ended up coming to a complete halt in the water when in front of us started coming a large light from the port side into the front of the ship, and it was a large Israeli naval ship. Our captain saw it coming, pulled all the power off, and we were just dead in the water. The captain saying, we didn't come here to ram any ships. We didn't come here to have passengers or anybody injured. So he stopped. And then we were immediately boarded by commandos from at least 2 of these Zodiac boats, 20 commandos per boat, that immediately came on board our ship and took control of it.
Well, that contradicts the Israeli's line that all of the other boats had been boarded peacefully, and that it was the passengers on the Mavi Marmara that were the problem, because they didn't allow the Israelis to board their ship peacefully.
Well, it is kind of an interesting tactic the Israeli military and government public relations people are taking, in that trying to blame everything on the passengers who are being boarded forcefully, who were being shot at, and even on our ship. And we had vowed that we would do peaceful, nonviolent resistance to any boarding attempt. Here we were in international waters, over 70 miles off the shore of Gaza, outside the self-declared security zone of the Israeli Defense Forces. And here we were being stopped and boarded, I mean, essentially acts of piracy on the high seas. So we had vowed that we would put passengers on the stern railings to say to the Israeli commandos that would be on board to stop. You are not invited to come on board. This is a civilian ship. No weapons on board. You have no right to board us. So we put women passengers on the stern so that the testosterone factor would not come into play with males against males. The women that we had on the stern of the ship were yelling at the commandos, were putting their bodies in the way of the commandos trying to board. But, of course, with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, whether they're Americans in the U.S. Special Forces or SEALs or they're Israelis in their commandos, these guys do what they're told to do, which is take control of those ships. And so they just essentially ran over the women on the back of the ship, although it was after they had fired these percussion grenades into our windows, breaking out the windows, breaking out the back doors to our ship, glass everywhere, smoke everywhere. They were firing paintballs that hit one of our women in the face. It could have knocked one of her eyes out. It could have hit the side of her head to have killed her. Just because they say they were using paintballs doesn't mean that they're non-lethal. So they were forcefully boarding and shoving people on the ground, hog-tying them, putting hoods over them, taking them to the bow of the ship. So it was definitely a forceful boarding, to include using a taser gun or a stun gun on one of the Australian photojournalists that we had on the ship. She was on the top of the ship with another reporter from Australia, Sydney Morning Herald, and all of a sudden the commando came up over the top and then shot her with a stun gun that knocked her across the roof of the ship. And she had done nothing other than being there as a reporter.
And Ambassador Pack said that he was detained in Israel for a couple days, I believe, and then he was flown back to New York, and he didn't know that the people had been killed on the Mavi Marmara until he got back to New York. Was that your experience?
Well, actually, Ed Peck and Joe Metters, who was a U.S. Navy veteran who had, was a survivor of an Israeli military attack on a U.S. naval vessel, the USS Liberty, 43 years before, almost on the same date, June 8th of 1967, in which the Israeli military attacked the USS Liberty, which was a spy ship, an intelligence ship.
Right.
And the attack killed 34 people, wounded 174 Americans, and the U.S. government never really did an investigation and never formally said to the Israelis, you did it and we demand an apology out of it. Well, Ed Peck and Joe Metters had made a decision that they would return to the United States, and if we were going to be deported, they were going to return immediately. So they were really only in Israel less than, I believe it's 8 hours. They were taken from the Ashdod port to the airport and deported that night. There were, I think, about 20 people that chose to do that, to go back to their home countries, to include the three German parliamentarians, who, when they returned to Germany, gave some dramatic and powerful press conferences, as did Ambassador Peck. The rest of us stayed, were put in Israeli prisons for about between 48 and 56 hours. We found out that people had been killed aboard the Mavi Marmara when women who were on board the Marmara finally arrived at the prison, and we heard the stories of 9 people, to include the husband of one of the women that was in the prison with us. He was the coach of the national taekwondo team. I mean, that's how big a terrorist he was. He was a taekwondo person. We talked to women on board the ship that were nurses who had been in the first aid station trying to treat these just tens and tens and tens and tens of people that were being brought in with severe gunshot wounds. And they said that the first aid station was up to their ankles in blood.
Oh. Wow, that's a combat zone. And really, you know, nonviolence is a way that we always encourage, but, you know, when does the line cross between, you know, self-defense and self-preservation?
Well, that's a very good point. And here we had told the world that these ships were unarmed, that there were activists on board, certainly from all these countries. But international customs people had checked every one of the ships to make sure that there were no weapons on board, because that, of course, was the allegation of the Israelis, that these ships could be carrying weapons. And that's why they say they have this embargo, this siege around Gaza. But that's not all of it. As one of the Israeli ministers said, we want to put the people of Gaza on a diet. We want to put such pressure on the people of Gaza that they will renounce the elected government, which is Hamas, which is listed by the United States and Israel as a terrorist organization, but it certainly is a political, social, economic, and a militant group. And not that I agree with all of its tactics. I certainly don't agree with their firing the thousands of these homemade unguided rockets into Israel, which tragically have killed 30 people in the last 6 years. But the disproportionate use of force by the Israeli military on the people of Gaza, to include this almost now 4-year blockade, siege, quarantine that is just strangling them, plus the 22-day attack that occurred in December of 2008 and January of 2009 that killed 1,440 people, left 5,000 wounded, 50,000 homeless. That's just plain wrong. Collective punishment and disproportionate use of force are the rallying point of citizens of the world to have the Israelis and the international community stop doing this to the people of Gaza.
Well, recently, I think it was just this past week, that Israel completed their own investigation of the incident, and it was like no surprise to anybody that they found that their IDF used appropriate force. What do you, and you talked about an international independent investigation. Do you think that that is something that is possible?
Well, yes, and, you know, the militaries of the world, whether they're the Israeli military or the American military, when they investigate their own military operations, it's seldom that they are critical of it. We certainly know that from U.S. military investigations that continually say that, oh, appropriate use of force was okay, or appropriate force was used when, you know, 80 civilians in Afghanistan were killed by drones, or when special forces come in and murder 15 women and children, and it's a cover-up, and yet nothing's done. So it's not surprising that the Israeli military does exactly what the U.S. military does. An independent investigation is certainly possible and must be held, because we cannot allow just the Israeli military to do this. But the key evidence of what happened on board the Mavi Marmara, and also on all the rest of the five ships, is in the hands of the Israeli government, because they took every computer, every camera, every cell phone from all 750 passengers. They have our evidence, and we demand to get it back. I've written letters to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the State Department over a month ago, demanding that my government protect me and the strongest ally America has, as the Obama administration, the enduring relationship. Well, if it's so damn enduring, well, let's just see if what pressure can be put on the Israelis for returning all of our materials, so that we can put together the timeline of what happened, because it is there. It is there. It's just that the Obama administration is not putting any pressure on the Israelis for it.
Well, of course not. Recently, I found out that our friend Lori Arbeiter is trying to put together a boat to go from America, or an American boat, to go to Gaza to try to break the siege. Are you involved in that? And, you know, what are the preparations and what are the plans?
Oh, yes, I'm definitely involved in it. In fact, when I came back from Israel, when I was deported from Israel, cannot even apply for admission to Israel for the 10 years, not that I want to, except that it is a way to get into the West Bank, which I definitely want to encourage people not to forget all of the things that are happening on the West Bank, the illegal settlements there, the apartheid walls, the checkpoints that are so brutal and humiliating. We cannot forget the people on the West Bank. But when I returned to New York, within 3 days, they had set up a speaking opportunity for myself, for me, and with Adam Shapiro, one of the co-founders of the Gaza Freedom Movement, the organization that put together the flotilla. And I called for the citizens of the United States to rally to fund a boat, to raise funds so that we could purchase a boat in the name of the people of America and participate in this next flotilla. And it corresponded actually with what some of the people that were from New York with the Gaza Freedom March, they had already been thinking about that. So it was a convergence just upon my return that we started working on this. And in fact, the speaking tours that I'm on right now, I just completed a 6-day speaking tour here in Texas. We're raising funds for that. We're trying to raise anywhere between $300,000 and $370,000 to purchase a ship, on which anywhere from, well, if it's a smaller ship, it'll be 20 passengers. Hopefully we can get one that will have 50 passengers on it that will participate in the flotilla that is to take place in late September or early October.
And is there a website that my listeners can go to?
Absolutely. It's called us2togaza.com. And there's also a blog spot. There's Facebook, US2Gaza. We have fiscal sponsors that people can either donate on the website through PayPal, or if they want to write checks. We have two fiscal sponsors that are listed on the website. And we really do encourage people to, in the name of the people of America, to show our own government as well as the Israeli government that we totally abhor what's going on and that we demand that the siege of Gaza end.
Do you feel since this happened, it was a very tragic event and unnecessary, and there was so many, orphans created or people who lost their father because of what happened on the Mavi Marmara. But do you see a shift in attitude towards Israel? I mean, most people around the world, are very sophisticated about Israel and that their occupation of Palestine causes the problem that they that they claim that they're always defending against. But do you think that that has caused any kind of a shift here in the U.S. over attitude about Israel and maybe that we shouldn't be sending them $7 million a day, especially with so many problems we have here in our own country? Do you see a shift in attitude?
Well, certainly the people of the United States should be more aware now of international condemnation of Israeli policies. Although I would say that our own U.S. media, of course, still is very protective of the acts of the State of Israel. Our own government is protective of them, that turns a blind eye and never really criticizes or holds them accountable for these criminal acts. I mean, the Obama administration should have put sanctions on Israel first for the 22-day attack a year and a half ago. We have the U.S. Arms Control Act that says that if any U.S. military weaponry or equipment is used in an aggressive, offensive manner, that the United States must stop providing military aid, and that would be $3 billion a year to Israel. And they didn't do it after the 22-day attack a year and a half ago, and they haven't done it after the use of U.S. helicopters, weaponry on the attack of the Marmara. Most Americans still are hoodwinked by our own media, although there is some of a shift, I think. But still, I think Americans still are drinking the Kool-Aid on the fact that Israel can do no wrong and it's only the fault of the Palestinians, which is essentially what our president said last week when he talked to Netanyahu and during the press conference. They didn't even mention the flotilla. They didn't mention the illegal settlement still continuing. And all Obama said is to the Palestinians, don't embarrass Israel and don't create any incidents. Well, it's not the Palestinians that are doing this. It's the Israelis that I wouldn't say approval, but certainly not the United States government not putting any comments that would show them that they should stop doing these criminal acts.
Well, I happened to be in front of the White House last week when Netanyahu came. And not only does the media block it out, but the people who were there protesting, we had to go back to the middle of Lafayette Park so Netanyahu would not see us when he came there. And we had to stay there for the entire meeting so we couldn't, express our freedom of speech to where Netanyahu or Obama could hear it. And not only that, but there was about 2,500, 2,500 Orthodox Jews who came to protest Netanyahu and protest what they call the Zionist state of Israel, and not one mention of that was in the media. You should have seen 2,500 Orthodox Jews with their, it was 100 and something degrees in their black clothes with their coats on and their hats out there protesting this, and you didn't see like a speck of it in the media.
It is really incredible how our media continues to be one-sided in this. I also had heard about the Orthodox Jewish delegations being there at some of the voices most critical of Israel these days are members of the Jewish faith who are horrified about what the State of Israel is doing in their names. And the number of Jewish organizations that have formed to challenge Israel's policies gives you heart that, you know, it's not, it's, you know, and when we protest Israel, you know, people call us anti-Semitic. Well, it's not that at all. We're equal opportunity critics, both of our government and of any other government that, that commits criminal acts, no matter what the population is, whether it's Christians, Jews, Muslims, whatever. I mean, you and I both are equal opportunity protesters of criminal, inhumane policies.
Well, absolutely. And I would encourage people listening to go to our YouTube page, Peace of the Action, P-E-A-C-E of the Action. It's all one word on YouTube. But we have we got one of those rabbis, and he explains on film the difference between Zionism and Judaism, and it's a very, you know, instructive, amazing time that he gave us to do that. So we were, you know, very honored about that. So, Anne, tell us your website again, or the website that people go to donate for the American Boat to Gaza, and how people can get a hold of you if they would like.
Surely. Well, the website for the donations for the U.S. Boat to Gaza is ustogaza.com, and also you can reach it through the GazaFreedomMarch.org, and then my website that shows the speaking schedule that I have, which is a very strong one because so many people want to hear about the Gaza Flotilla. My speaking schedule is on VoicesOfConscience.com.
And in just a little over 2 weeks, it'll be the five-year anniversary of Crawford, Texas, when we went and set up Camp Casey.
Oh, isn't that the truth? And, in fact, I went with Leslie Harris from Dallas, Texas, on the tour. She was kind enough to drive us around. And when we were in Waco speaking, the next day we went over to Crawford to, you know, just to be there and to go to, to the Camp Casey sites and the Crawford Peace House, and just to remember that 5 years ago when you decided to challenge George Bush on this war in Iraq and what resulted from it. It was incredible, those 27 days in the ditch and 18,000 people that came to protest Bush. And I'm so honored to have been a part of it with your leadership.
Now we can't even get 18 people out to protest Obama.
That's another story.
That's another show.
it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking that so many people that, you know, were really hoping that President Obama would be a real change. And unfortunately, we've seen that he is a part of the political system, that it really doesn't matter whether it's Republican or Democrat. They're all part of the same system. And we really do need to put a change to that system in.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for being on the show again, and I'm sure we'll have you on again. And thank you for your continued protest, no matter who's president.
Well, Cindy, it's always an honor, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
That was our dear friend, Anne Wright, Colonel Anne Wright, and former member of the U.S. Diplomatic Corps. This is Cindy Sheehan Soapbox at cindysheehansoapbox.com. I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott, my producer, Mike, my webmaster, Rich, you for listening, and Anne for being our guest. Tune in next week.
I must make my witness. I have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.